Well, welcome to News Talk, and this is D.G. Martin. Most of us remember William Styron as one of the great authors of the last century. I first got to know him reading Lie Down in Darkness. The Confessions of Nat Turner brought him much accolades and also some unfortunate controversy. Sophie's Choice, made into a movie, is a memorable book. For some of us, his most poignant writing was in dealing with depression. His book, Darkness Visible, has been helpful to many who are suffering from that condition. Well, now we have a chance to get to know him through his letter writing, his correspondence over his lifetime. And we have that gift thanks to his widow, Rose Styron, with the help of a professor at the University of South Carolina, has assembled a selection of letters that take him all the way through his lifetime. And we're fortunate to have Rose Styron, who's going to be visiting our community soon, to be our guest. And Ms. Styron, thank you so much for agreeing to visit with us about this wonderful book. I hope you're still there.
I'm still here. The guy's waving to me out the window, and he's going to leave. That's fine.
All right.
We're okay.
We're talking by telephone. She's up in Connecticut.
I'm in Martha's Vineyard. Connecticut house. And I've moved to our summer house in Martha's Vineyard, which we're now trying to winterize.
Wow, it's cold up there in the wintertime, isn't it?
Woo, is it cold?
The book of letters, many of them written either from Martha's Vineyard or from the Connecticut house. I'm stuttering because I don't know how to say this. You're coming down to see the folks at Duke and the folks in our area.
I will be there next week.
One of the great—
If the storm doesn't prevent me from getting there.
Oh, no, you got to come.
Predicting you're just 2 feet of snow
You got to beat the storm. But one of the great professors at Duke, Bill Chafe, wrote a book recently about Hillary and Bill Clinton, and he talked about visiting the Styrons at Martha's— the Clintons visiting the Styrons. And so Bill Clinton says this is a great book, but he's also a part of the book. There's correspondence with the president, isn't there?
Yes, there is. He and Hillary became good friends when they started coming to the Vineyard, and I treasure both of them.
Well, talk a little bit about the book and why. What was it that— what was the moment where you said— Bill, his letters, he had so many letters, let's collect them and put them together. When did that idea come to you?
Well, I had no idea there were so many letters, but when I was trying to dismantle our Connecticut house to sell it, I looked for and saved all Bill's papers first, the unfinished, yellow-lined pads, various shades of fading that he had stored in closets and drawers over in his study. I got all those together and sent them to Duke. Then I came back to the main house, which we've lived in for almost 50 years. We'd been across the way in the barn-turned studio for 4 years and then moved to the big old farmhouse we fixed up. And that became the main house. And in the last few years of Bill's life, he moved back from his dark study to a white bedroom in the main house.
Did he kind of kick you out of that room?
Yeah, he did. How'd you know that?
It's in the book.
My study, which had been our daughter Polly's bedroom, actually. So it was kind of a childhood, very white bedroom with big windows that I loved. And I worked there, but I gave it to Bill. And was happy to have him in the house because I think he'd gotten kind of lonely across the lawn in that big old dark study. And so then one day in that room, I opened the white bureau drawers and found drawer after drawer stuffed with letters to Bill that he had saved from his favorite people, whether it was family or neighbors or colleagues or mentors or young writers or fans. And wow. I was startled and quite moved by the fact that he had saved all these letters in the last few years when he'd been in that room. So I began to read them, and I collected them and sent them to Duke also. And then I wondered what prompted the letters, the other end of this
what he had written to them. Yeah. He didn't keep carbons, or
he never kept carbons. He didn't think about the future at all. When he wrote letters, he was in his own reality as opposed to his own fiction. I think when he got stuck in fiction, he wrote letters. Or when he was tired of fiction, he wrote letters, and the letters were a kind of two-way reality check with each of his many individual friends. And the tones of the letters are quite different from each other, quite personal and individualized and very funny, with particular senses of humor and closings and salutations and sardonic views of the world as it was then, and amazing records of our life together. And I had no idea.
Did you never
upstairs or across the lawn writing letters all those times? So they were a great surprise to me.
He then did not say, "Rose, would you take a look at this letter before I send it?"
Heavens, no! Yeah. I had no idea he was writing them. It was all very personal. It was like his own inner novel.
Wow. Well, before we go forward, I tell you, one of the most surprising things for me as I encountered this book was coming to grips with with this marriage that you guys had, and the Bill Styron's work reflects the artistry of a typical great writer, and we think of them as being temperamental. We think of Ernest Hemingway, who was not one of Styron's heroes, but multiple marriages, multiple all kinds of things like this. And you and William Styron got married young and stayed married forever.
Didn't think we were going to.
What do you mean?
We got married in Rome. We thought, well, this is just convenience because Bill's at the American Academy and they won't let him attend any of their functions if he's living with someone else.
Come on.
Next door. No, that's true.
No. So you all got married because so he could go to the function.
It was for me too, of course. I'm just teasing. I'm teasing. But that was one of the things that we thought would be a bonus. That was not why we got married.
Well, tell us about tell us about that time. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You don't have to be gentle about the corrections, but just William Styron had written this great book, Lie Down in Darkness, by then?
Was
he working? Was he working on the book? Had been published? He was now...
No. That was before I knew him.
So
he had already written Lie Down in Darkness, and it became a bestseller, and he won the Prix de Rome for it. He was the first fiction writer to... In fact, only one poet, Anthony Hecht, had a Prix de Rome, and Bill was the next year and the very first fiction writer.
Well, now, have you read the book before you met him?
No.
Well, tell us about how you all met and then how it got going.
Well, to be frank, he came maybe a year and a half earlier to Johns Hopkins, where I was a creative writing student, because he was a friend of Lewis Rubin, who was one of my professors. And he had just written Lie Down in Darkness, and Lewis invited him up to speak to the writing classes. And there were very few of us, so we were all, no matter what, I mean, I was in poetry and criticism, but all of us were commanded to come to hear Bill Styron. And we went and heard Bill Styron, and I don't even think I shook his hand, and left. There was no conversation whatsoever. Maybe he had it with the fiction students. I don't know.
So, and did you had not read the book at this point?
No.
But you heard about, or he talked about the book, I guess.
He talked about the book. And then, like a year and a half later, I'm not good on time, Steve.
Now, can I interrupt you? I'm terrible interrupting. But you, when you mentioned Louis Rubin, who, as you must know, is a hero down here.
Well, he's a wonderful guy. He's my hero, too. He introduced Bill and me.
Now, how did he know Bill?
I don't know that. You have to ask him.
Well, we will.
They're Southerners. You all ask each other.
No, I mean,
no idea.
But we do. But I didn't. I mean, I read the letters in the book to Louis Rubin, and of course I read them because he is a literary hero, and all of these beautiful women down here, mainly from Holland, but some from Carolina, who were his students, adore him. I mean,
he was wonderful. I felt the same way. He taught at Johns Hopkins when I was a student there.
So Louis Rubin, we can give him a little bit of credit. He introduced you.
He gets all the credit because when I arrived in Rome, where I was planning to live for a year, he wrote me a letter and said, "Hey, Bill Styron just arrived in Rome too, and he doesn't know anybody, and I don't know who you know. But if you get up to the American Academy, why don't you look him up?"
Oh, come on. Oh, this is such a great story. So did you look him up or did he look you up?
No, I looked him up, but I didn't mean to. I had a date with another fellow at the American Academy after I admired the gorgeous Stanford White building that we were in. I was pretty bored with my date. And as we were leaving, I saw the little cubbies where notes were left for each of the fellows. So I stopped and wrote a note and said, "Dear Bill Styron, you won't remember me, but Louis Rubin said to say hello. And if you want to call me, I heard you at Johns Hopkins." And I gave him my name and phone number and left.
Uh-huh. And then what happened?
He called immediately.
Oh, the same day or the next day or within the week?
Well, that was nighttime.
Yeah.
When I left, so he called the next day and said, "You know, how about meeting me for a drink in the little bar in the basement of the Hotel Excelsior in the middle of Rome?"
Oh, gosh, this is so good. And then what
happened? So I said, sure. And I remember it was a rainy day, and I had a big black raincoat with a scarlet lining on. I remember because he remembered and talked about it, and walked down the little narrow stairs to the downstairs bar thinking, gosh, I hope I'll remember what he looks like.
Now, he looks pretty handsome guy. How are you going to forget him?
I got down to the bottom of the stairs, and there was only one little table, and there were three guys at it, and the one on the left was clearly not Bill. He was a dark-haired painter who had come over with him from the American Academy in Rome. And the one on the right was Truman Capote, who was absolutely thrilled to me because I'd read his books. And in the middle was Bill Styron, whose book I hadn't read. And he was the one who was, you know, tall and handsome and who I went and sat next to. So we had a wonderful evening, and both the painter and Truman waxed eloquent about Bill's book, Lie Down in Darkness, and how much they'd liked it. And I stupidly said, "Oh, yeah, wonderful book," which, and I had not read it. But anyway, we had a great time. And by the end of the evening, Truman said, "Hey, Bill, you should marry that girl." Anyway, he called me up the next day and said, "How about another date the day after that?" And
without Truman and the painter along, I hope.
Not this time. But I thought, oh, my God, I pretended I read his book. I better go get it before I see him again. So I went all over Rome, and I couldn't find it in any bookstore. And so I went, as they were closing at 6 o'clock, to the American Library branch in Rome. And I said, "Do you by any chance have a copy of Lie Down in Darkness?" And they said, "Sure." And I was very relieved, and I got myself a membership in the library and took out Lie Down in Darkness. And in those days, all the American libraries abroad had sort of opaque plastic covers over the books, and only the spine was clear so you could read the title. So I took the book home and crawled into bed. This is a little rented room in an apartment that two other American girls who worked at the embassy had, and I became their third roommate. I'd only been there a week. And I sat up in bed and began to read the book and thought, oh, dear, he's really cute, but he can't write.
No, you didn't either.
I did. And I closed the book and went to sleep. And the next morning, I got up, and I opened the book again. And this time, I opened it to the title page inside. And it said, Lie Down in Darkness by a writer named Hayes. It wasn't Bill's book at all.
Oh, wow.
It just had the same title.
Oh, wow.
And it was a novel which had come out a couple years earlier and died as by another guy. So I was both relieved and amused.
Rose Styron, this is such a great story. I hate to interrupt you. We got to take a quick break.
Okay.
We'll be right back. We're visiting with Rose Styron, the widow of William Styron, and we're talking about how they first met in Rome. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Rose Styron. She's the widow of William Styron, and she's collected a thousand, I think, letters of Styron through his lifetime. We're talking, before the break, we're talking about how Rose and Bill met, and we left them in Rome after their first meeting. Rose has wanted to read the book before she saw him again, and she checked out Lie Down in Darkness from the American Library. Read it, thought it was awful, and then found out it wasn't the Lie Down in Darkness that Bill Styron wrote. And what happened next?
I went to meet him.
But, and you hadn't read the book? You hadn't read the book yet?
Of course not. I didn't have the book. And I decided, what else could I do, that I would try to make it funny and admit I hadn't read the book and that I had the wrong one. And so we had a date, and I did that, and he thought it was funny, too. He didn't mind at all, and he said, I'll give you a copy of the book. So he gave it to me, and, of course, I read it, and it was wonderful. So I was both relieved and charmed.
Well, that's great. Well, it was a few years later, I guess, that I read it, not too many years later, and I had the same experience of liking it from the first. I had a little bit more reason to like it, I think, because it's set in the geography and in the kinds of culture that I'm familiar with in North Carolina and Virginia. And my wife, well, I didn't know this at the time I read it, but I was interested in Sweetbriar Girls, and so all of these things kind of came together. And it was just such a dark, I mean, it just scared me to death about depression and mental illness and the kinds of things that could happen.
Scared me, too.
But wow. And so you liked him? You liked the book? What happened next?
Well, we dated every night for about 3 months, and he proposed, and I accepted, and we went off. It wasn't even 3 months. It was probably 2 months. We went off to Paris by car in a terrible snowstorm and avalanche, but we made it because he wanted me to meet his Paris Review friends. He'd been living in Paris before, and it helped start the Paris Review.
And who were those friends?
Peter Matheson, George Plimpton, Tom Ginsberg, Harold L. Humes, Billy Dubois. That's basically but Peter Matheson was his closest friend, and so Peter got us a room in a little tiny pension right near where he and Patsy lived. Patsy was pregnant, and they were not going anywhere, so we stayed right near them.
What did your mama think about this?
My mama was totally against it. I mean, she did not like the idea that I was living with Bill Styron and not married to him.
Well, was it that, or did being married cure her of her skepticism about this arrangement?
I'm sorry.
Was it the living, living together without being married that worried her?
Well, that was part of it. But the other part was that she didn't know him and his family. And in Baltimore in those days, she was a widow, and I was a decade younger than my older siblings who were married and on their way. And she wanted to know something about who my boyfriend was. And she understood that it was fairly serious. So she had him investigated, had his family investigated. And that didn't go down well with either of us. So
she didn't like the Siren family?
Oh, she loved them. She didn't know who they were.
But
they
Baltimore. So you all got mad about the investigation, not about
the investigation we got mad about. No, and Bill's father, you know, took the ferry up to Baltimore from Newport News to meet my mother, and they adored each other.
Oh, okay.
But that was not how we found out about it. We only knew that she, and she had met Bill in Rome with me. And it wasn't that she didn't like Bill. It's that she didn't understand either what we were doing or understood that I could be serious about somebody who was a writer and might never make any money and treat me as she thought perhaps I should be treated. But that was just, you know, old Baltimore and the way they handled things. And I knew that when we got a letter from Bill's father saying, "Dear son, what trouble are you in? You can tell me. There's been a gumshoe from Washington came over on the ferry, and he's been questioning all the neighbors about our family. What is the matter? You can tell me."
Oh, wow.
And so was by letter. So that was, you know, letters were very important in our lives. We had many letter experiences, and that was one of them. That letter was on the bed in Paris when we got there to our little tiny room.
Now, did you guess right away that your mother may be ticking?
There was no question in my mind. She had done the same thing to my older brother been a young ensign in the Navy at the end of World War II. And she'd done it to him, and I recognized instantly that that's what she was doing to me. And I remember my brother was very cross, but there was nothing we could do about it. He didn't marry that girl. But I married Bill. So.
Well, now, because of the
No. I just remember the instance of the investigation.
Well, what great stories. We're going to take another break. We're visiting with Rose Styron, the widow of William Styron. We're talking about their lives together in the context of a wonderful book of selected letters, which Rose has collected and shared with the rest of us. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Rose Styron, who is the widow of William Styron, the author of so many books that have been important to me and to many of us here in this community. Lie Down in Darkness, Confessions of Nat Turner, Sophie's Choice, for instance, and also a wonderful book about his depression, Darkness Visible. But we're having fun talking about something that I thought was remarkable, and that is this long, enduring marriage between Rose and Bill Styron. And Rose, thanks for you've let us in on a wonderful part of y'all's life.
Well, it's fun to talk about it.
Now, it wasn't always a bed of roses, and neither you nor William Styron have resisted not being forthcoming about the difficulties that he had and that he caused you from time to time with alcoholism, with depression. But he had a wonderful wife who was resilient in all of these things and loved and adored him, you know, over and above these things that were hurdles to overcome in his life.
Well, just to start out, alcoholism was not a problem. You see that cropping up because in a couple of letters he was funny about worrying about drinking too much early on in his life, but he was in no way an alcoholic. He never drank before late at night when he had finished all his writing and creating and walk-taking and conversations. I mean, he drank at dinner, and he drank until he went to bed, which was, and he may have drunk too much, but never too much. I mean, he was never drunk. He never, there was never any question that he was driving us home from, you know, country dinners or island dinners, even if he had a lot more than I could stand to drink. I mean, I'm a half a glass of wine person, and he could consume quite a lot, but he was not an alcoholic, and he gave it all up a couple times and ended up having a glass of wine at dinner at night in the last 15 years of his life. So 20 years of his life.
So he was not only not an alcoholic, and he typically didn't drink too much, or didn't...
May have drunk too much late at night. I don't know. I went to bed after we had our... He would read to me every evening what he had written in the afternoon, and we'd talk about it, and I'd go to bed, and he'd stay up late and revise or do whatever he was going to do for the next day, and probably had too much to drink because he didn't get up till late morning.
I
got up early and typed for him or took the kids to school, so I didn't know about that.
That's really interesting. So he did share with you it both in reading to you and then asking you to transcribe what he'd done, and so you all talked about that. Now you're a poet. Did you all talk about your work?
Not at all. Not until the last decade of his life. Then he got really interested in and asked me to read what I was writing and so forth. But I'd say for the first 40 years we were together, he showed absolutely no interest. And so my writing was completely separate, and I put it in the drawer for years and finally published like 3 books. I mean, he wasn't against my doing it, but it just was not part of his life, and he wasn't interested.
I mean,
he cheered me on when I had a book published, but we didn't discuss my poetry really until, like, as I say, maybe the last 10 years.
And later on, he began to really appreciate what you were writing and heard your voice.
And wanted to know it and got reinterested in poetry himself.
Yeah, well, that's a topic for, you know, that's a separate topic. That's a wonderful wonderful topic.
But I thought he was a fantastic writer.
Did you really?
I would do everything I could to promote it for him, and he needed a great deal of solitude and quiet. But he also, once we became social, which we often did, then he was the best dinner conversationalist around and completely enjoyed it. Although he hated travel, once he got to the places where we were meeting our friends, he would write all day just the way he did at home, and have wonderful evening enjoying conversation and drinking.
Well,
Jim Jones's wife and I used to try to go to bars with the two of them on the Left Bank in New York. I'm sorry, in Paris. We would visit the Paris every year for 17 years. And Gloria and I couldn't keep up with the two of them. They both drank. And we would fall asleep on the wherever we were until they could, you know, take us home. But they were both up bright and early the next morning, or at least Jim was up bright and early in their Paris apartment. Bill would sleep late, but they both wrote all day, and they both drank all night. So that didn't make either of them an alcoholic.
Talk to me a little bit about the time between your marriage and beginning a family and finding a house. Lie Down in Darkness, of course, was a great success. And sometimes these first novels, which are so successful, sort of are not all together beneficial in a writer's life. And I noticed that it took a while before the next blockbuster book, which is The Confessions. It wasn't that Bill Styron wasn't writing, but...
No, he had a big novel. Well, first of all, he had a very short novel or novella in between The Long March about his Marine days.
Right, right.
And then I met him after he had written that. And then he began and wrote a long novel called Set This House on Fire, which was very popular in France and Italy somehow is now not mentioned much in the U.S. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as popular in the U.S., and that came long before Nat Turner, which took a long time to write, and Sophie's Choice, which took even longer.
Tell us about the investigations and the research that went into Nat Turner, and did you go along on some of those hikes and some of those visits?
I went on one, which was incredibly interesting, you know, starting down in Virginia and going all over Nat Turner's territory. That was incredibly interesting to me. But the rest of it, Bill had planned out or went on his own to do research. And the same thing with Sophie's Choice. He went and did his own research first in Auschwitz, and then I went on the second trip with him while he was still writing it.
Well, I want to talking about the Nat Turner experience, which had to be full of incredible highs and, you know, and also incredible lows as a family. You dealt both with the writing, the acclaim that came from that book, and then the criticism, you know, it's hard to understand.
It was both a very exciting and a very hard time for Bill. The writing of it was quite exciting. During the 60s, it was in the middle of the civil rights movement and turmoil in the South and in racial issues. Jimmy Baldwin, James Baldwin, who lived with us for a year in Connecticut. He lived in Bill's studio and came over, and we sat every night by the fire, and the two of them would talk about what they were writing. And it was Jimmy who encouraged Bill to write Nat Turner.
And write in the Nat Turner voice.
In the first person. And that's what he got slammed for.
But I love this, and this is great. This is pointed out in the letters that I think clearly that that James Baldwin encouraged, supported Bill Styron in this, both in the writing and then in the post.
Absolutely. And John Hope Franklin, the wonderful Southern historian.
Yeah, you're talking about another one of our heroes.
Yeah, mine too. He and Jimmy were Bill's two first and biggest supporters. There were others, of course, but he was happy they supported him, but absolutely desolate that so many others did not understand him, thought he was presumptuous, thought he might even be a racist, and of course he was such a human rights activist and anti-racist that hurt him more than anything.
They thought
he should not put himself in the voice of one of their heroes, and that he didn't represent him properly, really hurt Bill terribly. And he kept saying, but this is fiction. This is a meditation on history. I'm not trying to recreate it. There's so little known about Nat Turner. All we have is the actual confession on record, and the rest of it is speculation.
Yeah. One of the things that I missed the most was not having the movie. And that also had to be
Bill was very sad about that. It was all set up. The sets were built in Virginia. James Earl Jones was going to be Nat Turner. And then it was canceled because of all the black protest.
It
was never made, and Bill was very sad that it was never made.
Well, I'm sad just thinking about it. We're going to take a break. We're visiting with Rose Styron, who is the widow of William Styron, talking about their life together in the context of a wonderful book just come out, Selected Letters of William Styron. Rose Styron and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.T. Martin. We're talking about the Selected Letters of William Styron, a new book. It's edited by Rose Styron with Blakeslee Gilpin, who's a professor at the University of North Carolina, University of South Carolina, but all in the context of Rose Styron's visit down south with us. Rose Styron, you mentioned earlier Lewis Rubin and the friendship between or among the three of you. He was your teacher at Johns Hopkins, and he, of course, knew Bill Styron, I guess, through just the literary connections. But he continued to be a friend, and there are lots of letters that you collected from Bill to Lewis Rubin. Tell us about how you got those letters.
I wrote Lewis Rubin asked if he had any.
And so he'd say
that's what I did to everybody. Uh-huh. And I thought I might get 100 letters. In a couple of years, I had 1,500. And I said, that's enough. Let's stop here and look at things. But I had written Lewis to see if he had letters from Bill, and by God, he did. It was wonderful, and they're great letters.
Well, I want
to... Now when I go to Duke this time, I'll be coming to Duke and Chapel Hill. I'm going to go look up the letters to Bill, which I really haven't read. My daughter Al read them, but I didn't. I'm going to go into the archives. Which I think will be fascinating.
Yeah, that'll be terrific. Well, and just be honest with me about this now. Did you, Lewis Rubin introduced you guys?
Yes, he did.
Did you ever say even in jest to Lewis Rubin, "You're the one who got me into this"?
I probably did. Probably if we were having one of our, if we were having one of our downs instead of ups in our marriages, because if a marriage lasts 53 years, it's not all going to be smooth sailing, as you can imagine. So who knows? I might have called up Lewis and complained. You'll have to ask Lewis.
Well, I'm going to do that.
I don't think the three of us were together.
Oh, is that right? Really?
No. I think when Bill went south, he may have seen Lewis, and he obviously wrote to Lewis all the time. But except for that momentary platform at Johns Hopkins when Lewis introduced Bill
the three of you
writing classes, I'm not sure we were ever together, but ask Lewis. I have a terrible memory. Bill's memory was so great that I didn't try to remember anything, and that's why the letters were such a gift to me, because it reminded me of our whole lives.
Well, I don't know where to go, and I'm going to go this direction. Lewis Rubin was obviously a great teacher, and you experienced that teaching. Do you remember why was he such a popular teacher?
I wish I could answer that. I don't think I can answer it. When I said he was my teacher, I didn't really have classes at Johns Hopkins. He was there as a professor, and we all met as writing students, and I liked Lewis immensely, but I could not tell you how his classes went.
Yeah,
except that everybody else loved them that took them. I was taking philosophy with George Boas and creative writing and poetry with other teachers there.
Well, we just got a minute or two left, and another theme of a great teacher that is goes on throughout this book of letters, and also through the works and reports of many of our other literary heroes, is the importance in Bill Styron's life of his teacher at Duke, William Blackburn.
Oh yes, he was extraordinary, and Bill adored him, and they stayed friends until Blackburn died.
What was it about Blackburn that you think, why did he like him so much?
Because he was a gentle, gentlemanly, incredibly well-read scholar and great appreciator of Bill's work, who brought him along just when Bill had started writing fiction in Blackburn's class. And he and Blackburn just shared so many values and similar interests in literature and great words. And he was a wonderful man. And Bill, I think, aside from his father, who he was so close to when he was young, saw Blackburn as his mentor or surrogate father, whatever, but they really had a terrific relationship. And the last time I saw Professor Blackburn, he actually came to Roxbury to surprise us on New Year's Eve when we had all our Paris Review and other friends sleeping all over the house. And so they had a last bizarre evening together. Bizarre for context. And then we didn't see Professor Blackburn again.
Rose Styron, you've been so wonderful and generous to share this time with us, and I'm sure that the folks who are listening, like me, would like to continue this conversation for a long time. We're grateful to you for the plans to come down here next week, and we're just so excited about that.
Well, I'm excited about coming. Thank you for inviting me and for this conversation.
Thanks to Rose Styron for her book, The Selected Letters of William Styron. Thanks to you for listening. This has been D.G. Martin, Who's Talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.